got another episode of the Salumis Podcast. Today's episode is going to be somewhat of a promotional one. We've got two special guests. They're makers, and they're going to explain that term today. We've got Chris in here.
What's up?
We've got
Kayla
and Sarah.
All right, cool, cool.
And then don't forget about
this. Don't forget
this
our sweet
Who
one.
Are you?
Brandon in the background.
Oh. There you go. So today we're going to talk about a couple things, but mainly it's all going to be centered around why. These people are making some awesome, awesome arts and crafts. And, you know, before even going any further, we have the BG Makers event at the A-Frame in Bowling Green, Kentucky. That event starts, it's June 23rd. Do we have a time?
It's 2 to 8.
2 to 8? Okay, 2 to 8. There's going to be some really awesome stuff out there. If you are big into arts and crafts and supporting local companies, this will be the place to be. So let's get started. Kayla, take the floor. You're up. What's your why? What brings you in here? I know we had you on our first episode, but things have things have changed. You know, you're in the thick of it. You're making silk and suds. That is the shout out that we give every episode.
Yeah, we've all grown a little bit.
So, tell us about your journey so far, and you know, has your why changed since starting?
Well, I'm a little bit doing it because of desperation.
Okay.
A little bit doing it because I don't want to look for a retail job, and that's really where my only skills lie.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can sell anything, but I don't want to sell for somebody else. I've been looking for jobs pretty much every day since the last day. And, yeah, it's been a struggle, and it's really stressful. And, you know, I've also got things going on with family, just a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of people want my attention, and I don't really know where to go except... Like today, for instance, I walked into a store and I just got to talking with the shop owner and was asking her how she got started. And she was actually looking for bath bombs. And I told her, what I did. And she was actually looking for a
silk
bath bomb.
Silk and suds. Shameless shout out.
So I think my heart and my head are telling me that I need to do this, that I have to do this. But I'm holding myself back by...
Let me ask you a question, and this might be completely off topic or off base, but whenever you're actually making your bath bombs, does it feel more like a chore or more like an outlet or a mixture?
Well, it's an outlet for sure. Physically making bath bombs is an outlet. However, one of my biggest fears is going full time with this is it's not going to be an outlet anymore. And that's why I've been making them for a year and I've never wanted to go full time until now. And a lot of it is because I'm desperate.
Okay, we'll tackle that. Sarah, tell us your story.
What's your favorite color?
Yeah, let's go.
I hate that question.
That's awesome.
I love all the colors.
I like green. Yeah, you do like a lot of different colors.
Well, my two colors that I paint the most with are teal and pink.
Teal is dro.
Yeah, that's a cool color.
Everyone loves teal. It's just like you can agree upon
teal,
it.
Turquoise, teal, all that,
yeah.
That spectrum.
Aquamarine, seafoam green,
yeah.
You know.
That's cool. I got a question. What made you want to do art on saws? Because I think that's badass.
Oh, yeah.
I don't even know. I've always felt like I've had an old soul, and I love antiquing, I love consigning, I've been doing that my whole life. There's something about making old things that I find into, like, more, like, modern and edgy.
Sure.
And I love, like, the folk art pattern, so I kind of came up with that, and I feel cool because a lot of my art reminds me of other things and other people, but that feels more original. I've seen people paint like landscapes on saws before, but that wasn't like modern enough for me.
Yeah, you can get those at like a gas station in Cape City though.
Oh, really?
I'm playing.
I was like, what? That's crazy. So that's pretty tight. I like that a lot.
And not to get like overly philosophical, but the fact that you've got something that's kind of like rough and brutal and utilitarian, and then it's got this super like symmetrical, nuanced, mm-hmm. delicate, and then the yes. patterns, the colors and the patterns are very soft.
Yeah, so like it was a weird transition into like even admitting that I like the color pink because I was kind of a punk growing up, I went in and out of weird emo goth phases. And all of a sudden, I just started drawing flowers and loving, you know, really feminine things. And I like mixing that with harder edges, you know, bones, saws, antlers, whatever. I like the mesh between those.
Contrast
two.
Is awesome. Yeah. Like with my cooking, like I like to combine kind of conventionally like lowbrow stuff with really uppity stuff. Like I'll do like jowl bacon and then like golden oak shiitake mushrooms and beef cheeks and things like that. So like highbrow, lowbrow, the contrast is just beautiful when you're creating art.
Yeah, it ties in the past and the present for me, and it like serves as a bridge to how you're always changing and your art's always revealing something about you, even if you don't know what it is.
So do you feel that you're, and this goes to both of you, I know you're still finding that balance between it being, you know, a passion or some kind of a desperation thing, but do you feel that when you both do art, it's telling a story? It's more than just I'm doing work to sell it. I know you had said you're bridging past and present, or past and future, or anything like that. But do you feel that it's somehow telling a story? And by doing that, again, this is to both of you. Do you feel that you're kind of giving a little bit of yourself away? Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing?
Well, I mean, that's like the beauty of it. The vulnerability aspect is terrifying, but it's also the thing I think that drives people. It's like you're super afraid of being seen for who you are, even if it's no part of that is bad. You're just, it's scary, you know, and we're in a society that teaches us that it's actually terrible to be vulnerable. So anything that you're going to make, you know, is going to be judged and people are going to see it, especially with social media. And you just know, like, oh, that person is making those things. Well, what about that other person? And you just, by default, you compare yourself. And that's, it's a bitch.
Let's hear it. I know you have something, Kayla.
I haven't even thought of it like that. I've definitely thought of it from a business standpoint. Like, at the last show that I did, I listened to what everyone was talking about. I took notes about what everybody bought, what I sold out of and everything. And then I made more of what they liked and didn't make anything that didn't sell. As far as it being a creative outlet, I haven't even thought about it being, like, a way of telling my story and what it looks like. But what maybe that's something that I should look into, you know?
Or it could just be an element of a larger story, you know what I'm saying? It could just be a pivot point or something you build off of, and then you eventually find clarity.
Yeah, I sit there and I think of, one is, there's one part of, or two parts of the art for both of you. One is coming from the heart. One is coming from the mind. And that's not a bad thing for either of them, because if you're good at something and, like, functionally you can handle it, fucking do it, you know? There are some people that are in jobs and they're just automatic with that shit, and it pays the bills, it does whatever, right? I think the same thing can be applied to art. If it's something that you just have a skill in, handle it, especially if it gets you cash or whatever. But I really like, as we sit here and learn from you two in just this short amount of time, that it feels like it's truly coming from two separate parts of you, you know. And I think that there is much to be learned from both of you, from both sides. You know, there's one part that talks the business part, the functional part. There's another part that connects with your soul, and I think that's something that both people can learn about, because I think that there are some people that are doing this kind of art where they're all soul, they're all heart, but when it comes to business shit, it's just like, ooh, I don't want to touch it.
That's, you know, me. I'm insanely emotionally driven, and I'm constantly working on that, but like, as an artist, I think that's just what I'm supposed to be. And it just shows through, and I don't ever have a plan for it. I'm not looking for it to tell a story. I'm just trying to express whatever is going on inside, you know, however that comes out.
Is that for you, whenever you are creating your art, it is about supply and demand? That's what you're thinking in your head? Continue to replicate this thing, you know, that more people are buying based on, I'm doing my air quotes, analytics or something like that. You're saying, this person or these people like these things a lot, I'm just going to make a lot of these.
It's funny that you say that, because thinking about it now, I've always, when I thought about doing this full time, I wanted to make something different for every time I sell. but I can't, I'm not good at connecting those to, like, the emotional side of it because I'm so business focused. Well, right now,
I think you're better off that way.
I don't think you have to.
Well, I mean, it's not one or the other, but I definitely feel there is this huge, like, gap with me ever becoming a full-time artist. Because I've tried it. I tried to even be a part-time artist with having a part-time job, and I was freaking out because I was like, I have to sell this painting so I can pay that bill. And the desperation actually changed my art, and that wasn't a good thing. You know, I think, like, you can create out of, like, a desperate place, just, you know, just wanting to be excited about something, but it shouldn't drive you. You should be in a place where you can comfortably create and be able to...
Well, that's not really a thing that's happening right now because I don't have a job.
But you seem more business-minded than I am. Like, I, like, every show, I'm like, I'm going to write down how much I made, what people liked, and I get so sidetracked. I don't even...
Really?
I can't stick to that plan. I'm just, like, in it with people, and I'm experiencing all the emotions and energy. So that's a good thing.
I think that there are, in 2018, there are a lot of... And I've come from the technical background, right? I feel like there are systems that can fill in the gaps for a lot of us, right? I think that there is no such system that can recreate what's happening in your soul. But for the business part, there's all kinds of e-commerce, there's all kinds of website builders, there's all kinds
supplements.
Of things that, well, yes, they are like supplements that will take that place. And at that point, it's just overcoming that fear of just trying this new thing because there are a million solutions for the same problem.
Right.
And I think that in itself is super overwhelming. And for you, I think that you were talked about the, you know, not having the job, the job loss part. I think that this is one of the best times for you. One of the best times. It is when you truly, yes, it sucks not having money. It sucks not having this stuff, but you don't know how hard it is to take a look at yourself and find out who the hell is Kayla when you're thinking about work. You know, I'm thankful at this time that I have, you know, the interstate and I can drive and I actually get time to think or listen or something like that. If I go too long, I'll be like, what the hell am I doing here and quit my job or something like that and go and become some big motivational speaker or something like that. But honestly, I think that you're in a really, really good time because I've said it before in a previous episode, once you hit a certain age, and I don't know how old the two of you are, but shit gets super practical real fast. You know, and it becomes... Unless you're a man child and all you do is just like play bidgie games all day. But
Sarah? It just hurts. There are so many.
I know.
There are so many.
I pay my bills though, at least.
Yeah, there you go. But it's... I think you're in a really good spot. It's just... And for me, it would be just raw emotion and just raw thought. And it's almost like children, where I think that children, when I look at my stepdaughter and some of the things that she says, it's just unhindered thirst for knowledge. You can go and learn whatever you want. I think you're in a really, really, really good position, but it's all about changing the perspective. Yeah. I will not say this shit is easy because, again, you got bills to pay, you know? But that's definitely something. I think right now maybe you can use the analytical sense as you do your art and you go in out there and you make an impact and you do all that kind of stuff, you know, make people feel good with their bath bombs based on analytics. But I think when you get to a point where you're really comfortable, then you can really create some real shit that comes from your heart.
And honestly, like at the age that all of us are, and not to get into the like biological element of it, but if you're not constantly challenging yourself, your brain prunes connections that it doesn't see as useful. So if you're not constantly challenging that threshold, you're going to more than likely end up in some kind of structural rut, and it's going to get worse and worse, and it'll get condensed, and you might produce awesome art, but it's like a pearl. Like, it's just sitting in there getting mulled over and over again, and it's not making its way out any. And that's something that I have to work on all the time, is being comfortable. It's fucking awesome to be comfortable, especially when you have a job where you're just kind of wide open all the time and pulled in so many directions and kind of parentalized with grown adults. When you get done, you're like, I just don't want to do anything. You don't feel like working on yourself. But whenever I sit down and I'm like, am I being a lazy bitch? Yes, I'm being a lazy bitch. So I get up and I do the stuff that I know that I need to do. And if you're not doing that on a larger scale, as, again, you enter your late 20s, early 30s, your friggin' brain is going to start pruning stuff.
Yeah. Do you, have you all heard of, this is something that Chris and I and Brandon have been talking about. I think you might have posted it, maybe someone did, about flow state, right? I made a post about that, about how you can enter that. And I wanted to save this for another podcast, but I feel like something like that would be very relevant. And hell, we can use it in our, you know, our next
Kalu episode. Kalu is smacked out on flow state.
Yeah, I'm super smacked
right
out. So that is, you know, they'll use a term in the zone, right? Mm-hmm. And it's this stage that you get into where it's like you forget everything else exists when you're lost in your art or you're creating or anything like that. And then afterwards, you literally lose track of time. You don't know what happens, and all of a sudden, you've got some kind of thing that you've just made there. And so they, the term is...
It's a dope term, but
transient hypofrontality, right? So
he's been practicing
that. Explain it
to
us like we're three.
Yeah. Right. No, I was totally. So the and I could be. It's transient. Me is like reducing. Leaving kind of, and then hypo is lowered, and then frontality is your frontal cortex. That's the stuff that handles your rational thought. Self-preservation, all that kind of stuff. Inhibitory processes in your head. And they say that they studied that with extreme athletes, surfers, snowboarders, all those kind of people. They said that when they really started putting a focus on that and started to tap into that, people started hitting crazy goals that were once never hit before. So they were saying that at one time, it was this article I read, that the highest wave surfed was like 20-something feet. Then once they got into transient hypofrontality and said, how do we get people to hit this flow, you know, this flow state? Once they got people to hit that, people were surfing 100-foot waves. You know, they were talking about snowboarders, how they were, the largest jump was something like 40 feet. And then once they tapped into that, it's 230, 240-foot jumps that these people are doing that. And when people jump into that phase, it's like, you're not worried about your body getting broken, right? You're just in that moment. There was another example, and we'll relate it to the art that you all do. I think you can sort of see this connection that's coming, but they had Michael Jordan. They were talking about how in one of the finals games, they'd called a timeout, and there was something like 3 minutes left, and they said that he came to the team huddle just in some kind of concentration, you know, he was just really focused and his face just looked really different. And then they said that there was, I think it was something like 3 minutes or so left in the game. And in those 3 minutes, he scored 18 points. And they said that there was, and you see this famous clip of Michael Jordan, he hits a three-pointer or something like that. And he's just running down the court like, I don't know, kind of like, I don't know what happened. And I think that to when we relate it to things like art, when we're creating, or when we're deeply in something that we're truly passionate about and something that we love, you literally just go into the zone.
Yeah, and it's not a subsequent thing. Yes. It's something you can sincerely train yourself to access.
I think you can absolutely train yourself to do it.
Yeah, you do. You have to. I mean, even a lot of the stuff that we do, like with powerlifting, for example, and I know there's a lot of, like, stigma associated with it, but it is sincerely zen as all get out. Like, you have to orient yourself. You have to clear your head. That's something I was working on with Brandon, is because you can look in his eyes when he gets under some weight.
I've seen it before.
And tell whether
he looks completely
thinking about
different.
It. Yeah, but now I'll put the headphones on him and I see his body relax and he just kind of accesses something, and it's made a world of difference in his lifts. So I believe it is something that you can train. I do a lot of, well, I used to do an enormous amount of sketching, and the overwhelmingly best stuff that I've ever done is just kind of like, I'm going to draw something, and then it just happens, and I'm like, I couldn't recreate that if my life depended on it.
That's the big key, is that you don't realize when it happens. So my question to you all is, has that ever happened while you're creating?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But then afterwards, I have this need, like maybe the next day, to keep doing that. That's when I get the anxiety, and I can't do it again. I have to,
like, I'm supposed to make... It only comes when you don't want it to come.
That's...
Yeah.
That's
you're driving.
Yeah. Or trying to fall
you're working.
Yeah. You're driving, you're like, ooh, I want to create something so bad.
So what happens? What happens if it, you know, when it's... Because, again, we're saying that it kind of just pops up there. What do you do?
I think it's... I mean, I just think it's kind of supernatural when it happens, and, like... I've read about it a little bit, and my favorite book is Big Magic, and she talks a lot about how people in ancient times used to think that this feeling, whatever you want to call it, flow state, was actually a spirit, like, coming into your body and helping you perform this task.
That's awesome.
Which, like, that was, like, a little out there for me. You know, I had done a lot of thinking about it, but I had nothing to, like, back it up with. And so I read that book and I was like, it really doesn't feel like me. It's like the imposter syndrome. Like, people my whole life have asked me, where the hell did that come from?
Wow.
You know, like, where did that weird painting come from? Where did that sketch come from? Like, I don't know. Like, I don't feel like it's me. It's something in me and I'm just letting it out.
Do you appreciate that when you feel when that out-of-body experience happens and you say that that's not me, but it is you?
I'm extremely grateful for it, and I don't take a lot of... I have a hard time taking compliments for my work, and I think every artist struggles with that. But, like, you know, it's this process that I feel grateful to participate with. It's like this force that I'm just working together with. Because I know that I don't have the skills to make something happen. And I just, like, I sit down and I'm like, okay, I have all the supplies I need. Like, let's just see what happens. And I let this, you know, this force, whatever you want to call it, the flow.
You're like a conduit for something else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just part of it. And I don't have to think I'm great. I just want to be with that feeling. That feeling, like, gets me through anxiety, depression, like, all of...
Well, that's so
all
good.
Of that
that's
fun
beautiful.
Stuff, you know.
That
so like
beautiful,
and it sounds desperate, but it's like
it's not like I'm low key. Just like that's getting me like right here. I'm just like damn.
Well,
that's...
it reminded. Is it a Whitman quote that it says? Do I contradict myself very well? I contradict myself. I contain volumes. Said Walt.
I don't know. That sounds crazy.
That's where it comes from for me because it's not as though you feel like you have multiple personalities, but I hate to even call it duality because there's multiple facets to it. Like, I'm multiple people. I mean, you're somebody different to everybody that you run into, but even within yourself,
sure,
you can take on multiple roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They
said, too, whenever you hit that state, and I can't go on and list the five brain chemicals that are released when that happens, but they
the
say that it's
transmitters.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like
everything starts.
Epinephrine.
Yes. All that
I
stuff
like hearing
starts
that
because
I feel it, but I don't know how to ascribe to
yes.
it or what facts to apply to it.
I mean, they say when those things hit, they compare it to some of the most addicting drugs ever.
Yeah.
It's just like an experience, and people are just trying to get to that point. And you know, this morning I went and worked out.
You want that new fix?
You want that new fix? Yeah,
you're chasing the dragon, Kayla.
I went and worked out this morning, and in my head on the way there, I was just thinking the times that I have hit that state.
Mm-hmm.
What was I doing? What happened? Mm-hmm. I'm literally trying, like you, Kayla, and how can I replicate this? How can I do the same thing? Because sometimes my brain kicks in when I should just be trying to embrace that moment, but it's just so hard to because it's so fucking good when it happens.
Yeah, and it's hard to, when someone asks you, it's like, how do I get into flow state?
I don't know.
And that's what our roundtable is going to be about at the Preservation Room with Pear and Flourish. There are these couple of girls that just like coordinate really cool discussions, and you drink wine, and I'm gonna be doing henna.
Sweet.
While all this goes on, and we're gonna like talk about flow
when's this
state.
When's this event?
July 7th.
I think that when I'm lifting and that happens again, I was saying that I try to go through and find what it is that happened. I was writing things down, and I was like, I know that before I hit some big lift or some big thing, I shake my right hand a bunch. And so I'm thinking, is that something that happens? I don't. It's just when I feel like I'm hitting flow state, I think that my right arm shakes a little bit, and I know that every single time that I feel like it's happened, the one thing that that happens is there is a complete disregard for what happens to me. Mm-hmm. Because I've hit flow state when I was driving on the interstate, and I had no clue.
For miles! And you're like, how did I get here?
Yeah, I have no clue. And the one thing that happens, too,
that's
is that...
That's a legit phenomenon. That's
I'm going, like, 70 miles an hour in the fast lane. People are just blowing by me, and I don't realize that I've just been in this zone. It's dangerous, but again, when that happens, I just have this complete disregard for what happens to me. If I'm lifting and I hit that, literally the thought that goes through my head is like, if I die, I die. If
you have to, and that is the thing, in order to be successful at that, and maybe a lot of other things, you have to be willing to just burst into fucking flames for it. Because if you sit there, if you're worrying while you're exerting yourself like that, you're done. You're not gonna complete the lift like you want to. You have to accept the potential of failure, serious injury, whatever. Clear your head and go. No hesitation, anything.
And I think the same could be applied to the art that you all do. I think that as artists, just like you had said, you worry about, what if this sucks? What if people don't like it? Often you're your worst critic. Because most of us are like, there is no way that I can do that. Mm-hmm. And so whenever you are creating, maybe the key, and I'm a firm believer in the fact that flow state is a pillar of self-motivation. Now, maybe the key to overcoming that fear is to finding a way to hitting that point. And where it just becomes, I don't know.
You got to test your threshold all the time.
So would you say the way to do it as an artist is just to continuously create and just wait for that happens? Because it doesn't happen every time.
Honestly, I think the way that you test your threshold doesn't necessarily have to coincide 100% with your art or your outlet.
Do you
just
agree?
Something what that's going to stretch out your threshold for anxiety, worry, whatever. And I've talked about it before. There's going to be some elasticity. Mm-hmm. And whether you're jumping out of an airplane, whatever, I know that sounds like a cliche thing to say, but test your threshold. It stretches you out, and it'll rebound a bit, but not all the way back to where you were prior. And it goes back to the whole rut, pruning thing, whatever.
What do you all do?
I agree with that, just because, like, I'm, like, a self-help junkie, and, like, I'm constantly, like, how can I push myself out of my comfort zone today? And I don't know where that comes from, but I just know that I have to listen to it.
That's a huge thing. Most people are not even aware that they need to.
Yeah, well, it's, like, I guess I have the picture in my head of, like, where I could have been and, like, where I want to be. So that always drives me forward, and I know, like, my art is the thing that I always felt like I was the best at. Like, I'm only good at art. Like, I suck at all other subjects but art. So I just feel like the more art I do, it's, like, more self-exploration. And the more I just get over the hell... Yeah. Like, just get over myself and, like, work through personal issues.
Yeah. There's one thing that you said. You said, where I could have been. Why does that... Is that something that affects you both? You think that you should have been somewhere in some other point in your life? I'm gathering. Do you feel like you should be doing better than you are or something, or what?
Mediocrity is just, like, it's my enemy. It's, like...
It's a tiny death.
Yeah.
I don't want to do the same thing every day. I don't want to be the person I was a year ago. Like, I want to be closer to the person I see myself as, and... It just takes a lot of work and, like, I guess just, like, visualization from, like, where you were once, and you just, like, you keep pushing yourself forward.
But you use the word could have been like it's gone.
Oh, well, I guess just, like, you know, I grew up in, like, a small town, and I was the only artist in my family, and so I could have very easily stayed in Minnesota forever. And my family still asks me, like, every month, like, when are you coming home? Like, it's a very like, family-oriented state. But I chose to go off on my own and go to school in Florida. And that kind of, like, led me down the path of, like, this is really hard, but, like, I need to learn this.
Where did you go in Florida?
Florida College.
Is that a Church of Christ?
Okay. It's in Tampa.
Sure. So what led you to Bowling Green from... there?
It's the weirdest connection that, well, it's no longer a thing, but, like, kids would transfer from Florida College to Western Kentucky because they had this agreement.
Oh, Jesus Christ, that's crazy, because I dated a girl that went to Florida College for a little bit.
That's, like, we're all here because of the connection. Like, Western, they said, hey, like, if you send your kids to us, like, we'll give you in-state tuition, your your credits will transfer because it was, like, a lot of, like, Bible credits, sure. you know? Not easily transferable other places. So, yeah, I ended up here because of friends that had moved here. And I, like, got into Western and decided not to go. And, like, I'm just going to do what I always wanted to do, which is do it myself.
Let me tell you, I'm going to give you huge props for mm-hmm. especially, and if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
28.
So, you know, when you were probably, what, 22 or something, when you said that you decided that mm-hmm. you weren't going to do school?
Yeah.
You know, when we're all much, you know, we're, the society that we're in now, it's showing that there's not, college doesn't have as much weight.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It's sad to say, but maybe it's not sad to say, you know. It's
like a known fact.
It's like a known fact now. But when we were all younger, mm-hmm. there was just that pressure. You got to go mm-hmm. to school. So huge kudos for saying, you know what, I'm going to be okay, because everyone told us that we were going to fail. We were going to not do anything.
There's one way out, and it's this path.
Yes.
Go to school, get a job, get married. You know, it's like this, like,
yes.
you know, fundamental.
It's indoctrination.
Yeah. And now you see so many people that went to school, and they're like, why the hell did I spend that money? Why am I taking on this debt? I don't regret going to school, because the things that I learned, it's... and the experiences that I had, but my God, I feel like there's still some stuff that I'm like,
it makes sense for certain fields and for certain people. People that are very career driven, they're like, they have the personality for it, they like know what they want. I never knew what I wanted. I got a degree in liberal arts, and I'm like, I want to be an artist, so none of this is helping me, really.
Yeah.
And I mean, I wanted to rebel against it anyways, so I did that, and like, I'm just gonna do it on my own.
You said rebel as well?
Yes. I graduated, but it was tough getting there. It was very tough getting
there.
Where
did you go?
Here, Western. Okay. But I'm actually from Indiana. The last semester, I can remember, like, laying on the floor crying because I didn't want to be here for, like, 2 years straight.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, he can attest.
You didn't want to be here?
I didn't want to be not here. I didn't want to be at school.
Yeah.
And, you know.
What did you want instead?
To not be in school.
Was there any other path, or was just, you just don't want to be here? Because I totally get that.
It was more, I have a degree in fashion merchandising, and I felt like the stuff on the internet was way farther ahead than what I was reading.
Page, yes.
In my textbooks, and I was like, I could teach the teachers how to teach this class, you know, and that was tough, because I wasn't the kind of person who wanted to speak up in class, and if you told off these teachers, they would get extremely defensive.
And, you know, some people would say that, and I'm not saying this is you, but some people would say that comes from an area of some kind of arrogance or something like that, but truthfully, if you're just really good at Googling stuff, you can find just about anything. Now, it's not going to teach you skill. It's definitely not going to. I feel that a lot of that comes naturally for some people. And it
authenticity.
Just, authenticity. Like
it's its own thing, really.
Yeah. And I think that those who can balance, you know, the skill and the authenticity, I think those people can make really, really solid products. And then, of course, when you want to monetize off of that, that's when it's taken to a completely different level. And something that we learned when we went and talked to a lot of the artists at the last Makers event.
At the library.
Yeah, at the library, was that they shared a lot of that same thing. Some people had the passion, and some people had the skill, but everyone was missing a certain thing. Okay, so I'll ask you both this. You've been in the Makers for a while. You're new to it.
Mm-hmm.
I feel there is the same behavioral traits, if you will, that kind of happens in a gym, that kind of happens in this type of thing possibly as well. And so there's a new guy or the new girl that comes into the gym. They walk in, they see a bunch of Adonises or people that are confidently doing their thing.
Like Brandon.
And it's just... is it hard to come in there and see all these different egos, see all these different personalities, or is everyone in there to just genuinely help each other? Because at the end of the day, you're all trying to make money. And not everyone has all the money in the world to give to one person. I know that you two sell different things, but someone may give their $12, $15, $20 to you, they run out and they can't give their, you know, $10, $15, $20 to Kayla. So how do you all manage those friendships and those egos and that drive to sell and that passion and all this other stuff when you still want to make some cash from it and you still have everyone that you're, I don't want to say competing, but it kind of is competing. How does that work? I think of it, maybe.
Yes, that's a great question. I started the Beachy Makers out of desperation for...
You started it?
Yeah.
What?
She's mad humble about it. She didn't even really say.
She just was like, bam. We have the OG in here?
I was like, hey, I like pointed to my friends and I was like, hey, I have this really good idea. Help me make it happen. And so like, they're like my extroverted friends that like hooked me up with like the right people. And so like, I don't take credit for it because I'm just like, I have this idea and I don't know why we're not doing it. And like, we have to make money. Like we have to sell our art and we have to help each other when we get discouraged and depressed and we want to give up because it was selfish. Like, I created it for selfish reasons. Like, I wanted community. I wanted, like, my friends to be in my life. And I wanted to see them thrive. And I wanted them to see me thrive. And, like,
why do you think it's selfish?
Well, I mean, selfish isn't always a bad thing. But, like,
Everything's selfish.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And that's okay. And, like, it's, like, self-care and all that. Yeah, so the process was really, it was unique because... I don't know, I just, like, I feel like I just, like, spoke it into existence, and then people just, like, brought it together, and it was the coolest thing ever, and the right people just came out, and the problem, like, before we started the Makers was, like, the art community in Bowling Green is insanely elitist, and there wasn't...
Thank you for saying that. Yeah. Thank you for saying that.
It's clicky.
No, okay. There was no market for us.
Really?
For people that weren't from... you know, a certain family.
So even the family thing?
Yeah. You know, we're not from here, so, like...
Yeah.
I didn't even think about that. Like, that's something we just don't even think about. Yeah, if you're from Bowling Green, people are kind of smug about being from Bowling Green.
It's clicky as hell.
See, I'm from Glasgow, and I'm like, I don't give a fuck what y'all think.
Yeah.
There you go.
I mean, but why? Like, Bowling Green's huge, and there's all these students here, and lots of talented makers and artists, like... I could never figure that out, but, like, I got a studio with my best friend who's an artist, and we were like, let's just make stuff together, because no one else gives a shit, like, what we're doing, and, like, we'll just give up. So, like, we met, and we started just meeting, like, every night at the studio, and we would stay up till, like, 3 a.m, just painting and drawing and telling one another, like, you know, you should... keep doing that, or maybe, you know, stop doing that. Like, we just, like, gave each other feedback, but that was the turning point for me. And then eventually I came to the point where I was like, this community sucks. Like, these people that are above us, that are supposed to be helping us and welcoming us in, are elitists, and they are all good on their own. And, like, we kept trying to, like, pull in our resources, but we just kept getting doors shut on us.
What do you mean, pull in your resources?
Like, I was, you know, we were a part of, like, the Bowling Green, like, gallery hop, and, like, you know, we were trying to, like, get connected to, like, whatever art community there was, and it just felt like the doors were shutting. We were like, hey, like, we're starting this group. If you guys want to come set up with us, you're welcome to, and, like, they barely came to our shows. Like, they barely said anything to us, and it was just, like, it was the weirdest thing. I just couldn't figure it out.
Really?
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
And I'm like a diehard optimist, so I'm like, no. Like, I'll work my charms on them. Like, we'll be friends. Like, they'll help me. I'll help them. Everything will be cool, and we'll be living in utopia together. And years would go by, and they wanted nothing to do with us.
I'm trying to not make it like an ego thing, but it's just... you guys have something so big and so beautiful that can really make an impact on this society. And it's like, we're screwing ourselves over by just not doing it. Like, fuck the big guys. Fuck the elitist people. You don't need them. You don't
and
need
that's what I started from, but, like, still, like, the more attention the VG Makers gets, it's, like...
That's the key right there.
Like, that gives me chills, and it also creeps me out. I'm like, how did this happen? Like, this one little conversation I had with my friends at the time, Melissa Jolly and Sarah Volpe, and I was like, hey, we should start, like, a makers group. You know, we should get all of our friends that are already doing cool things and just get them together so that we can make money and thrive.
So it was about making money first.
That sounds terrible because it sounds like you're...
It doesn't sound terrible.
No, it sounds like you're solely about making money, but, like, at the end of the day, like, you have to find a way to make money to sustain the thing that you love.
Yeah.
She says, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's... And I'm, like, I'm no friend of monies, but, like, I'm working through it. I'm trying to figure out how to handle money as an artist, and it's just, like, this constantly, like, difficult challenge. But I know, like, if we just try and we just form a community, we can start supporting each other. And I actually don't know how you do it without community. And we're, you know, we're still really young. Like, we're only, like, a little over a year old.
Give us your quick, you want to call it a pitch or whatever, of how you think it could be done. You said start with community. What's next?
It's difficult to explain the process, but, like, it's more of a feeling, I guess, for me, is, like, I know when I need to act on something. I just felt very strongly and, like, kind of desperate, like, you know, why isn't this happening? And I lived in Tampa, and, like, I worked at Busch Gardens, I painted faces, I worked with all these cool artists, and, like, we had art nights, and, like, we shared our supplies with each other, and, like, we, like, traded insider secrets and tips and all this stuff.
Is that going on right now where people won't share secrets with each other? I know that there's a lot of people that make bath bombs. Is that something that no one shares tips or something? It's just...
It's a mentality.
Yeah. Especially online. A lot of people... For bath bombs specifically, because bath bombs for other people other than, like, the big box Lush, they don't know how to make bath bombs, and they don't want to share their recipes. Mm-hmm. You can buy their recipes off Etsy for, like, $50, but it was a lot of trial and error. But that's something I would like to get into one day, is, like, write a book, share all of my secrets, you know?
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because there's just this, like, crazy backwards arrogance. Like, if I tell you the supplies I use, you'll one-up me. But it's like, I am coming from a place of there's enough for everyone. The better we work together, the better we all thrive. You know, sharing our secrets, sharing our supplies, sharing our inspirations, whatever we need to share, that's the thing that's going to keep us moving forward and not creating alone.
Yeah.
And I don't want to create alone for the rest of my life.
And I think, too, even if you share secrets, if you want to call them that, or share tips or anything, at the end of the day, someone who truly appreciates what you do, and I feel that this is also someone who is a repeat customer, they feel what you do. And that's not something you can just replicate. You just can't.
Yeah.
So two people can make the same type of art, and it's one person that could be coming from one way, another person that be coming from another spot. And I think that it's what they say, beauty is in the eye of the beholder, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so when that person sees that and they feel that and they're just like, damn, that works with who I am, that I can connect with this piece, they can tell who really put it in there.
Yeah, I read books like Steal Like an Artist, Show Your Work. For people that aren't in school, people that didn't go to art school or learn a trade on how to make a bath bomb or craft a wooden bowl. Like, there is no other way to learn except from other artists. You have to steal from them and then you make it your own. And that process is really humbling, and you feel like a fraud the whole time because you're like, I'm just doing what that guy is doing. But, like,
what if we remove the term stealing?
But doesn't someone get to a point where they facilitate someone else along the way, even though they initially stole? I think everybody that's great at some shit stole some shit.
You're borrowing it. Yeah. And, like, yeah, you can get, like, caught up on the terminology, but, like, really, we're all borrowing from the same source. Not one person was like, hey, I have this really great idea. Like, I hope no one copies me.
Yeah. Like, it's we all insane. Stand on yeah. the shoulders of giants type
yes,
deal.
Absolutely.
Like, everything. Like, if you were to be born and raised in the woods, it's not like you're going to invent quantum physics.
Exactly. Exactly.
I think we're all copying agree. Nature mm-hmm. somehow. We're all copying people that have copied someone else, whether you want to admit it or not.
Yep. Yep.
Well, and I think that even, like, those of us that don't have as much of, like, an artistic outlet, there's still kind of a longing to do things that you invest effort in physically, and then you see the outcome of it directly. I think that there's still I think it's a very natural human thing is to invest and then see an outcome. Whereas if you're in a professional field, it's a treadmill. Like, I'm never on top of shit. I'm always putting fires out and going and responding to crises and things like that. You know, you have these little lulls where you can look back on the wild shit that happened last week and be like, whoo, and feel good that you know that not everybody can do that. But it sucks. I want to go and, like, plant turnips and get all tan with my little straw hat and stuff. I don't want to necessarily be sitting. I hate typing up case notes. It's awful.
Paperwork sucks, man. Okay, so to wrap this all up, because I can seriously go on forever.
Yeah, we
I really could, because this is the kind of stuff that I feel that people need to hear. Because I am truly inspired to create. You know, the stuff that we're doing, I see it as art. And I see it also as a way to grow other people. And it truly, for me, it is a way for me to grow myself. I hope I can already tell the blogs I've written, the posts I've made, anything like that. It's a lot of this stuff I'm trying to help myself. But part of being able to do that is to share it with people and ask for feedback. I ask for feedback for everything. Mm-hmm. It's bad. But I just want to be better mm-hmm. because I feel like there is this higher place that I can hit. And by getting feedback and by learning from myself, I think that I can get that. But I need to, the only way for me to get there is to put myself out there, for us to put ourselves out there.
Yep.
And so what I want to know from both of you is, how do you think your work can inspire others? Because I truly think that both of what you do, and you both come from different spots, but I truly think that you can both inspire people.
And use the term inspire loosely.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
You know, again, it could be anywhere between kind of a gentle nudge, facilitation, mm-hmm. all the way to inspiring.
But well, I'll say this.
Contributing to someone else's success, mm-hmm. I guess.
I'll say this. It all started because I have a health condition that, like, I have eczema. Mm-hmm. And, you know, drugs aren't working. Medications, steroids, they don't work. Or they work for 5 days and then it's over, you know? And for me, bath bombs started out as a way to figure mm-hmm. that out. And as far as creatively, do something that's going to help yourself first.
What about you?
I mean, it always just comes down to self-expression, figuring out what that looks like, how to be yourself. And, like, you know, you're constantly, like, trying to be an example for other people. Like, if I have to look like a weirdo to free someone else to pursue whatever they want to pursue, that could look completely different than what I'm doing. Like, I will make myself uncomfortable for those strangers that I meet, and that's the most exciting thing for me. Like, we're connecting on a different level at that point. Like, art bridges that gap.
And
it's like,
in the age of the internet, it's strangers that you don't meet. You know,
yeah.
It's people that you don't meet. You know, these people can be going through and checking your wall or your Instagram feed, and they can gain some kind of inspiration from that. And let me tell you really quick, thank you, Brandon. 35 million Americans suffer from eczema. That's 35 million opportunities to make an impact on someone's life. I think that this is a wonderful story. I think one thing that you can do to really get your story out and possibly build some passion or anything like that is to blend your story with this. You know, I think that it is something that people don't think about, and it's in our culture to medicate. There's some kind of pill for everything. But the stuff that you're making, if you show people how, I don't want to say easy, because I think it is hard work, but for you to be able to make this kind of stuff and then put your story behind it, people will say, okay, I can make it myself, but damn, they want to see that story. They think that it can help them heal in some other way, because I think that eczema, for some people, it's got to affect you socially.
Any skin problem. Literally any physical, and like my other best friend, Lauren, she does Salvation. That was like born of skin issues and like body image issues and all of the issues that you deal with as just, well, human and a female human. And so like that's how she started.
Yeah, I've bought some of her stuff. I love her stuff.
She's very passionate about that, and she's not afraid to talk to you about like how she had acne for years or, you know, just like weird skin issues.
Honestly, it's just like we said at the beginning of the episode, people don't buy what you do, they buy why you do it. And your why, if that shows through, you can charge whatever. And I listened to Simon Sinek, he talked about Apple. People know that they can pay less than a couple $1,000s for a machine. They know it, but they buy into Apple's why. So maybe you don't need to focus on the analytics, the pricing, all that stuff. Your story is worth more. And that's both of you.
You have to present, manifest, whatever you want to call it, value.
Absolutely.
Because value is not inherent to anything. It's assigned.
Mm-hmm.
And when you were talking about mass-produced things versus, like, handmade things. Handmade things, as I've said, I believe on a previous podcast, that's an investment of that individual's time. That is that individual consigning their life, time, the most valuable commodity any human being has. Because that's what you convert into every other bit of currency or medium. But I think it really comes down to displaying value. And that's going to come from exposure. That's going to come from being tenacious about things. Or affiliating yourself with people that are tenacious, that have a vested interest in your success. I think things can run in maybe a little bit of an organic interdependency where people pick up other slack, you know, where they may be lacking, they pick up that slack. There should be this reciprocity there, ideally, in anything that's going to function.
Yes.
And I guess that would include BG Makers, right?
I'm banking on it.
Well, let me ask you, what is going on Saturday, June 23rd at the A-Frame?
So that is our summer market. It's at the A-Frame. We've held or hosted several markets there already. there will be some new vendors.
This is my first time at the A-Frame.
Is it?
Yeah.
So is this the big time? This is the big show?
Not necessarily like bigger than usual. Like we usually have like 25 vendors that set up. And they're all like, generally like we have like our staple, like 15 people. And then sometimes we'll have like 10 new people. So we have someone making bath bombs. There's going to be a face painter. I'll be doing henna tattoos and selling art. And then like all of our like our normal awesome like artisans, like the woodworkers, the pottery makers. But yeah, they'll be set up this Saturday.
Guys, I think both of you can be just pillars of motivation for people need to know.
Well, they already are. It's exposure.
It's exposure.
Yes.
When you said community and finding the right people, it's advertising and networking. That's what you need. When people can look at both of you and see your why. I don't know what is in the plans after Saturday, but I hope that you two can work together on something. Because I think that there's, and I'm not saying that because you're on the show, but there's just so many ways that I feel that you two can both do some stuff.
Yeah.
And there are people that are yearning for that type of motivation. There are so many artists that are in hiding. In my line of work, you know, I'm in the telecom industry. And so I work with our B2B customers and enterprise customers and stuff like that. But we call these other people shadow businesses who have consumer accounts or just regular lines. And these people have businesses. And it's like, guys, I can help you grow, but you have to come out of the, you've got to come out of the woods
really
and just let me.
I really appreciate what you guys are doing because, you know, artists have a lot of problems marketing and dealing with business and self-exposure. And I was nervous about tonight, but I was like, you know, I'm just like, gonna get over it. Like, I'm gonna just trust my intuition and my gut. Like, this is gonna turn into something good because of what you're doing. and that's what it's all about.
We really do appreciate it. Yeah. Thank you so much. Guys, this has been a fantastic episode. Thank you all so much. Can we repeat one more time the time for the event? It's at the A-Frame in Bowling Green, Kentucky, BG Makers Summer Artisan Market from 2 to 8. Come out there, bring all your money. Just throw it all at these people.
Cash money.
Do we have card readers, all that kind of stuff out there?
Brandon's going to be shaking it.
Brandon won't be shaking it. Will there be any food trucks? No, it's okay. Keep it. Will there be any food trucks or anything like that?
I don't know. We may have someone making cupcakes.
Okay.
That's all I know.
Slanging them.
Slanging cupcakes. Because nothing's the only thing better than shopping is eating.
Yeah.
I'm a big boy. And so I love to eat.
Maybe some hot dogs. I don't know.
I'll take hot dogs.
Random snacks. Who knows?
Chips and queso.
Yeah.
Well, again, thank you guys so much. Again, you're both huge pillars of inspiration for both for us and for the greater community, for our youth and people our age, people older. I really think that you guys are going to be able to do some awesome stuff. So thank you all so much. Please tell us let people know your Instagram info, your social media stuff. How can we get to you?
I have two accounts. My personal account is Sarah Eliz Gust, and that's on Instagram. And then my business account is Folk Sense Arts on Instagram. I also have a Big Cartel that you can find. A Big Cartel link, mm-hmm. a website that you can find through my personal accounts.
Cool. What about you, Ken?
Mine is Silk and Suds, spelled out. And you can find that on Facebook or Instagram.
Cool. Now, we did have one suggestion about the tub nukes. We said it in our last episode.
Yeah, I'm working on it. I have a scent. It'll be available in a little mini at the A-Frame market, but I am still working on design, color, everything.
Just make it look like a nuclear bomb, honestly.
Get a little sample ones. Yeah, like, we'll pay for them.
Yeah,
and
we'll
just throw them at people down at Tid Balls.
Just, yeah, find people like, in tubs and be like, treat yourself, wash your butthole.
Go ahead, young fella.
We very proud of you guys, so thank you so much. We got our own shameless shout out. Go ahead.
You know, Calvin Wiley apparently is in Patagonia.
Still?
And well, this is deliberate as hell. He's in the Wild West of Patagonia, out in the area where he claims he might be full of shit, I don't know, but he claims that you can just go out there and settle. So I'm like, Calvin, if you want to go out there, I'll protect you from cigarette smugglers.
From cigarette smugglers.
That's what he was talking about.
Really?
But yeah, apparently he's mobile. He'll be back in a week-ish, something like that.
Nice.
But while I'm thinking about it, we got to give a shout-out to Rome Sandwich Company.
Absolutely.
Apparently, it's delicious. And what else, Brandon?
I think it's nutritious.
Okay. Yeah, it's also nutritious. It's got some vitamins in it.
Some vitamins.
But especially...
A couple vitamins.
If like ketchup is a vitamin, you know.
Ketchup is a vitamin.
They have a great avocado with tuna that you can order.
I never thought about having avocado with tuna.
Yep,
you gotta think outside the box, Kalu.
I know, right? Golly, I just want to get grilled cheese wasted.
Kalu just walks around the house eating pineapple and filming himself.
I do that.
He's like, I look so good eating this pineapple right now.
Yeah, I really do.
But Rome Sandwich Company, go check them out. They're tucked away so you don't have to be bothered by riffraff, except for Tanner, because he's kind of riffraff.
If you want to get some work done, go to Rome Sandwich Company.
Absolutely, absolutely.
The great patio space, good coffee, some hummus.
Well, I walked into Steel Mill Co. They're located off the bypass.
Okay.
They were the ones who asked for my business card today, so
that's what's
I was
up.
Really excited
that's
about
that.
That's
what's up. Are they on Instagram?
Yes, they have a Facebook and an Instagram. It's just Steel Mill and Co.
Okay.
I think.
STEELMILLCO.
Shout out to my friend Quinna.
Is she going to be there? At the event?
There ain't no telling. She's wild. But I tell you what, her wares, second to none.
That's what's up. Hit us up on our social at The Salumist. And that's TheSalumist. Also, check out our website, thesalumist.com. Check out our blog. We've got some good stuff on there. Guys, please give us feedback. We have one more shout out, and that's to our buddy Eric Lancaster, hitting the slopes.
Yeah, where's he at now, Brandon?
Where's he at right now, Brandon? I know he skied and he was in Siberia skiing, so he came back from there. Where is he now?
I don't think he likes Brandon. He'd be texting me all the time.
Yeah, he doesn't really care for him at all.
Well, I think he's in the Andes, right?
Is he in the Andes?
It's a little bit precarious, though.
Okay.
But, like, he's got some snow leopards and shit.
Still.
I mean, no, he had cheetahs before, bro.
Cheetahs, yeah.
Yeah, snow leopards.
Man, that is crazy, dude. This guy's a hero. Really?
Yeah, they are.
Wow.
Wait, who is he?
Thank you guys again for listening to this episode. Wanted to remind you all that we do have the BG Makers event at the A-Frame in Bowling Green, Kentucky. It's Saturday, June 23rd from 2 p.m. to 8 p.m. Please bring all your money, U.S. dollars only. It's going to be a great time. I think you're going to get a lot of value out of there. Hopefully you can run into both Sarah and Kayla and just learn their stories. Again, we say that people do not buy what you do. They buy why you do it. I want you guys to feel what they're putting out there and really just buy into the movement. Start buying local. Start taking care of your people in your town. It's not just Bowling Green. It's anywhere that you are listening. Take care of the people in your communities. Guys, we're going to do some big things here, so thank you. Thank you so much. As always, provide feedback to us. We want to find ways to get better.
Oh, and real quick, if ever anyone that's listening has furniture, bed frame, box springs, chest of drawers, whatever, hit us up, because kind of what I do for a living is helping people out with those type of items that they don't necessarily have. And I don't necessarily have funding to buy all the items. So if you have it and you don't need it, you don't want it, or you want to do a good deed, hit me up and I'll come and I'll pick it up over my head and put it in the back of my truck.
It's all about helping the community, guys. Thank you guys so much. Take care. Be good. Be safe. Kick ass next week. We love you.
Peace.